Welcome to day two of our UFC 101 mega coverage audio here on MMATorch.com. I'm Torch editor Jamie Pennick, joined today by Torch columnist Jason Bent, and we're going to start part one today of our career retrospective on BJ Penn. Jason, BJ Penn's storied history before getting into MMA is already something of legend, because that's how he got the nickname the Prodigy. He was he got his black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu after 3 years training at the age of 21, and was the first non-Brazilian to win the World Jiu-Jitsu Championships at the black belt level in Brazil before making his MMA debut. So he came in highly lauded and definitely as kind of the talk when he made his debut at UFC 31 against Joey Gilbert. And that first fight, we got to see right off the bat the grappling ability of BJ Penn. It was really a grappling fight for a while, and finally he was able to break loose and pick up a TKO after getting Gilbert's back and flattening him out and just launching a bunch of punches left and right to the sides of Gilbert's head, and he picked it up with 3 seconds left in the first round. It was a highly impressive debut for the guy that is now the lightweight champion and one of two guys to hold belts in two different divisions. It was definitely an impressive start for one of the future greats.
Yeah, I mean, him reaching the black belt level so quickly, especially being non-Brazilian, is akin to these kids you hear about that are 10 years old and they've graduated college. It's that special. I mean, he earned a black belt with relative ease. Truly is a prodigy. His first fight, UFC 31, of course, in the dark ages, and UFC in Atlantic City against a pretty serviceable opponent in Joey Gilbert. At the time, solid fight, great debut. In hindsight, looking at all he's accomplished since then, it's an amazing debut. But when you look at what he did before he got into the UFC with his rapid ascent to the black belt level, this is exactly what he should have done. You know, this is really essentially LeBron James coming in and scoring 30 points in the NBA, to put it in terms of basketball. This was BJ Penn making his statement immediately against Gilbert, a fantastic win and a debut that really has not been matched. It really hasn't. I think it was a truly special fight. Finished it in the first round, and this was the start of not just the prodigy, but his rise to being the pound-for-pound king at one moment. This was a fantastic debut against Gilbert for Ben.
Well, yeah, he showed himself right off the bat to be well advanced of a lot of guys in their first professional fight. I mean, he didn't look to have any jitters. He looked to be completely on his game that night and just looked to be the force that he would become. We saw a flash of on that night, and looking back, definitely you see that it doesn't look like the debut fight for someone. It looks like he had fought a few fights coming into that one, at least.
I mean, this was not a debut fight. This just happened to be his first fight in the UFC and professionally. It wasn't a debut by any stretch of the imagination. This was the handiwork of a guy who was born to do this. I mean, that's essentially what it is with BJ Penn. He was born to fight. He may not be the most supremely motivated guy, but you have to understand he was blessed with a certain amount of ability and really has never been forced to work too hard to become where he is today. And that's not a slap to him, but when you've got a Ferrari, there's really no need to push it. There really isn't, because already you're faster than everybody else, and that was BJ Penn. His debut was just a perfect debut, but, you know, for anybody else it would be supremely special. But looking at BJ Penn, it was what was expected of him. This is what he should have done, which is special in and of itself. But BJ Penn would not be the fighter he is today without having made a debut such as this, because first round win over Gilbert due to TKO was what was needed. Had he done anything less than that, it would have been inherently lazy. So this was a great performance by him, and one that showed the world this is BJ Penn. Of course, it didn't show the entire world. This was the dark ages, but everybody else was like, okay, this kid is for real. He indeed is the prodigy.
and he took his second fight less than 2 months later against Dean Thomas, who Dean Thomas in 2001 is no joke as a lightweight. I mean, even now, he's not a joke as a lightweight. He's still a solid lightweight fighter. Now he's down in, he was going to be in the featherweight division for his last fight, but he's no joke in 2009. And in 2001, he was definitely up there in the, mid to high range of the lightweights in the UFC. And BJ Penn comes into this fight with Dean Thomas, his second fight, taking it at the very next show at UFC 32. And he's trying to get this one to the ground right off the bat. And Thomas is doing a very good job of holding him off for a good minute before BJ pulls guard. And Thomas is getting some strikes in on BJ and trying to advance his position. And we get to see some other tools from BJ Penn when it gets stood back up. And he lands a flying knee to the jaw of Dean Thomas that drops him and gets in his second fight an even more impressive victory than he did in the debut.
And the thing is, this remarkable looking back, and obviously everyone has to start somewhere. This was the swing fight. BJ Penn versus Dean Thomas was the swing fight. And, you know, again, Dean Thomas in 2009 is no joke, and BJ Penn is nearly a god. But, yeah, that knee to the jaw, those unanswered punches, this was fury. We already know he's got the technique, and he obviously can do it, but this is where he showed he can fight, in my opinion. This was where BJ Penn showed that he could fight, and he had the killer instinct. I mean, this was just a remarkable win. In hindsight, just amazing. But, you know, again, Dean Thomas is Dean Thomas. This was no slouch. This wasn't a tomato can. This wasn't just some kid off the street. This was Dean Thomas in the UFC, and BJ Penn completely decimated him. Obviously, now you would favor BJ Penn tremendously, but at the time, no such thing would have been projected. And again, it was the swing fight. And here we are today, and we're looking at Dean Thomas, who's still just a solid hand, very good fighter, and BJ Penn at the top of the division. It's amazing to think that that guy was going to wear the 155-pound belt someday, but he did, and it was that knee to the jaw that just started things rolling. But in my opinion, this was the aggression. This was where BJ Penn could fight. It was a tremendous victory for him.
And he'd return again once more in 2001 in November of that year at UFC 34. I mean, just that fact is you're looking at the dark ages there, where you see that UFC 34 came nearly 5 months after UFC 32. So now we're seeing 2-3 events every month, every 2 months, and very clearly they weren't putting on events at the level of which they are now. And this is where BJ was making his name, was to all the hardcore fans who are still watching the events, and all of the fans who have gone back since to watch these fights. And his next fight against Cal Uno is a highlight that is still played in his video packages to date, because it was over in a flash. Cal Uno comes flying across the cage, trying to throw a flying knee. BJ sidesteps it, steps forward, rocks him back to the cage with a couple of pinpoint shots to the jaw, and pounds him out against the cage. 11-second knockout against Cal Uno, who would later take him the distance in a championship fight. This was, again, on top of the Dean Thomas knockout, another devastating victory for the Prodigy, and another sign of what he had in his arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, this is just tremendous. I mean, a man who can finish in 11 seconds is a great thing in the fighting world. Not so much outside if you ask the first girlfriend, but in this one, sidestep the kick, sonic boom of a combo, hammer fists over 11 seconds over Cal Uno, and BJ Penn, if you didn't know he was for real already, you knew now. And it was still amazing. Here we are at UFC 34, and again, still in the dark ages, but this is a fight that is impressive no matter how you look at it. I mean, 11-second knockouts between unskilled brawlers are like, okay, a lucky shot. But here was two supremely talented fighters, and it was a matter of BJ Penn sidestepping a blow that would have landed on nearly everybody else. And not only did he sidestep it, lands the shots, finishes the fight. And to me, again, this is indicative of his talent, prodigious gifts, and this was a fantastic win. Here he is 3-0 and prepared for Jens Pulver at UFC 35. He was ready to fight for the UFC lightweight championship.
Yeah, it took him 3 fights to get to the UFC lightweight title, but I mean, that was the case for a lot of guys back in the early years of the sport, because no one had, very few people had that many fights at this time, and especially at the 155-pound level. And here comes BJ Penn coming to take on Jens Pulver, who is really the UFC's first great 155-pound fighter. And this was one of those very, very good early fights that, some may argue that it didn't belong on the UFC's greatest 100 fights countdowns that they did the fan voting thing on it. It was still a very good fight that BJ could have won, nearly did, with an armbar near the end of the round in the, I believe, second round on Pulver, and that would have snapped his arm right off had he had more time to hold on to it. But then we saw our first glimpse of the BJ Penn non-conditioning machine in the third, fourth, and fifth round, and Jens managed to just completely wear him out and take this decision to hold on to his lightweight championship. And here we saw this began what has kind of stuck with BJ throughout the years, is not having a gas tank because he doesn't try enough in training. He tries to coast on his God-given talent or things of that nature that have been said about him in the past. Kind of started with this bout because he was taking the distance and was not ready for the fourth and fifth round of this fight.
No, not at all. And the thing about this fight, which looking back on, of course, at the time it stood out, but Pulver kept it standing in the final round. He was pressing. He rocked BJ Penn. Huge combination. Penn comes back with a low blow. I don't know. It seemed to be inadvertent. It was horrendously painful, but you don't know. They restarted. Pulver rocked him again, and it was over. It was definitely, Pulver's fight all the way through, but here was Penn looking, very lazy, actually. This was, Jens Pulver's win, but this was the first time, like you said, that we'd seen, the non-conditioning side of Penn. And to me, it looked like he got frustrated in that final round. I think technically you match the two of them up. Obviously, BJ Penn's always going to come out on top, and did so in their eventual rematch. But here was the first time he was faced with somebody who had something in return and could keep pressing the action. And I think it not only frustrated him, but the fact that he just wasn't in good enough shape, because nothing had ever gone the distance before. He'd never fought as much as he did against Pulver. And in my opinion, that final round, it was frustration that led to the low blow. I just think that was just a saving grace to keep himself from getting stopped. But this was a fun fight, a tremendous one to go back and watch if those who have not seen it, they should. At once, this was one of the most important bouts in UFC history, particularly in the early days. UFC lightweight championship, Jens Pulver. This is what made Little Evil what he is today. This is why he is still important. This is why Pulver, after so many losses in a row, still commands respect and deserves to be watched. It's because what he did against Jens Pulver back at UFC 35. This is where BJ Penn ran into his first stumbling block, and where Jens Pulver made his career.
Yeah, it really was. And BJ took this first loss in stride, came back just a few months later at UFC 37 against Paul Creighton, picks up his fourth TKO victory in 5 MMA fights. Now, this is something that is worth noting, because you've got this highly touted Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner who finishes 4 of his 5 fights, the 4 fights that he wins, by KO or TKO. And it's interesting to note that BJ Penn, who is definitely one of the best jiu-jitsu guys we've seen, who's very talented at submissions, didn't pick up a submission until his 8th mixed martial arts bout. And here he picked up his 4th straight TKO win after not counting the loss with Jens Pulver in there.
Yeah, and this one is where you feel bad for Creighton. I mean, fighting a guy such as BJ Penn in his first UFC fight, he didn't look awful, but BJ Penn is just on an entirely different level. If you tell anybody today, okay, you're making your debut against BJ Penn, most people are going to run screaming. They will sign the EA MMA deal, and they will run away from the UFC. But here was Paul Creighton in his debut. The announcers talked him up and gave him some credibility to those who had no clue who he was. But, again, this is BJ Penn, and you're feeding something to the lions here in this one. Again, he didn't look awful. BJ Penn was great as usual. Perhaps it is a credit to Creighton that he was not finished much earlier, but this is BJ Penn we're talking about, and this is one of those fights that if you look back on, it's a gimme. Even though, you know, it was pretty much a gimme then, but in hindsight, definitely more so. But, yeah, I still feel bad for the guy. He was fed to BJ Penn in his first fight. Not something you'd want to do to your worst enemy. And, you know, another highlight along the way of BJ Penn.
And then his next fight at UFC 39 was about between two future welterweight champions. He took on Matt Serra here, took a unanimous decision victory, on his way to a second matchup with Cal Uno for the UFC lightweight title that had been vacated by Jens Pulver, who had left the company. And this bout, unfortunately, for as good as it was, didn't end with a decisive finish, went to the judges' scorecards, and ended in a draw, setting the lightweight division in the UFC back for the next 3 years. More than that, and it was a very good fight between Cal Uno and BJ Penn, a very close fight between Cal Uno and BJ Penn, and unfortunately, neither of them did enough to win it on all three judges' scorecards, or even two of them, as one of the judges scored it a draw. Each of them took it on one of the others. So, just quick thoughts on the Serra and Uno fights as we wrap up part one here.
With the Serra fight, I actually think it was the wrong decision. Neither guy did much damage. But in my opinion, Penn was just blocking, circling. Serra was more aggressive. Neither man really took the fight. But based on aggression, I still would give it to Serra. And this is having watched it recently. As far as the Uno fight, we knew we were not going to get what we got at UFC 34, which is why that was so special. A draw, in my opinion... You know what, it could go either way, and that can be said about a lot of fights. Nobody wants to see a draw, but you can kind of agree with it, and I do. I can see both sides of it entirely, but this time you had two guys who were at the top of their game, at the peak of their powers, and again, this fight was one that made Carl Uno respected amongst all the UFC fans as far as, you know, this guy is on an even level with BJ Penn. That 11-second knockout, you know, stoppage, you can forget that one for right now. So nobody ever wants to see a draw, but in retrospect, it's okay. It's okay. It didn't hurt either man, and neither man deserved to lose. So for that, a draw is fine in my book. But I still think Serra should have actually won that fight.
There's still plenty more to talk about on BJ Penn, so we will be back tomorrow with part two of this conversation. So, Jason, once again, thank you for joining me here on our daily update series. And this is Torch editor Jamie Penick signing off.